Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, February 9th, 2026. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, now we changed this email from questions to mail. So if anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of a website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on a donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, our scripture reading this week is going to be on 1 Peter. Let me see if I get that. Yep, 1 Peter chapter 1, and it'll be read by Alexander Scorby. 1 Peter chapter 1.
The First Epistle General of Peter, chapter 1. Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to the strangers scattered throughout Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia, elect according to the foreknowledge of God the Father, through sanctification of the Spirit, unto obedience and sprinkling of the blood of Jesus Christ, grace unto you and peace be multiplied. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, which according to his abundant mercy hath begotten us again unto a lively hope, by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled, and that fadeth not away, reserved in heaven for you, who are kept by the power of God through faith unto salvation, ready to be revealed in the last time, wherein ye greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be, ye are in heaviness through manifold temptations, that the trial of your faith, being much more precious than of gold that perisheth, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ, whom, having not seen, ye love, in whom, though now ye see him not, yet believing, ye rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory, receiving the end of your faith, even the salvation of your souls. Of which salvation the prophets have inquired and searched diligently, who prophesied of the grace that should come unto you, searching what or what manner of time the Spirit of Christ which was in them did signify, when it testified beforehand the sufferings of Christ and the glory that should follow, unto whom it was revealed that not unto themselves, but unto us they did minister the things which are now reported unto you by them that have preached the gospel unto you with the Holy Ghost sent down from heaven, which things the angels desire to look into. Wherefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and hope to the end for the grace that is to be brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ, as obedient children, not fashioning yourselves according to the former lusts in your ignorance, but as he which hath called you is holy, so be ye holy in all manner of conversation, because it is written, Be ye holy, for I am holy. And if ye call on the Father, who without respect of persons judgeth according to every man's work, pass the time of your sojourning here in fear. Forasmuch as ye know that ye were not redeemed with corruptible things, as silver and gold, from your vain conversation received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot, who verily was foreordained before the foundation of the world, but was manifest in these last times for you, who by him to believe in God, that raised him up from the dead and gave him glory, that your faith and hope might be in God. Seeing ye have purified your souls in obeying the truth through the Spirit unto unfeigned love of the brethren, see that ye love one another with a pure heart, fervently, being born again, not of corruptible seed, but of incorruptible, by the word of God, which liveth and abideth forever. For all flesh is as grass, and all the glory of man as the flower of grass.
The grass withereth, and the flower thereof falleth away. But the word of the Lord endureth for ever. And this is the word which by the gospel is preached unto you.
Okay, Jen, do we have any announcements? I know we don't have any questions. I'll just make the note again for those who've just come in. You know, we're changing our email because we had some problems from questions@nationallibertyalliance.org to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org. So if anybody wants to send a question now, we'll keep an eye out open for it. Jen, when you do the next newsletter, maybe we can make a note on a newsletter concerning that change.
Okay, we can do that, John.
Okay, do we have any announcements or anything particular to look at?
Not really, John.
Okay. All right, let me see. We do have the queue open, so anybody wants to get into the queue, it's a *6 and a 1 if you're on the telephone, and should be a button if you're on an Apple browser to get into the queue. I don't know if anybody, any of the leadership here has any questions or anything they want to talk about. If not, I did do a video on the economy and what's going on and what the plan is to turn from, what would you call it, I guess federal notes to dollars, to real dollars, dollars that are supported by silver. And, of course, gold, but silver certificates. That's what JFK had done. He tried to move over. And in those days, it wasn't that bad. I mean, here we're looking at a huge, huge difference between, on how much of inflation that we've got. But there is a good plan. And, like I said, I put together a video. I haven't had time to check it out to make sure it works well. But if we don't have any questions or comments, maybe we'll play that video because I didn't come with any other plan.
Fire it up.
Fire it up. Okay. All right. Hopefully it's without mistakes. I haven't uploaded it yet, and I haven't listened to it yet to confirm that it's okay. But here we go. So this is the plan that Trump has, and it's a logical one, on how he's going to save the economy once they turn and the whole economy falls apart. We're at $5,000 an ounce of gold thereabouts. I know it dropped a little bit, but it'll be going up. A lot of people think we'll be hitting 10,000 before the year's out. I'm convinced we're going to hit 10,000 a lot sooner than that. And at that point in time, we're going to have a serious, serious problem. And I believe it's going to possibly go as high as $20,000 an ounce. At that point, the dollar is totally worthless. And let me play the video I put together on this. It's about, I'm not sure how long it is, 30 or 40 minutes, but we'll play it, and maybe we can talk about it. If anybody has any questions, we'll just take it from there. Let me see if I can find the video. I think that would be helpful. Okay, here it is. It's called two-fifths of a penny's worth because that's where we're at now. You know, when I first wrote these papers, it was quite some time ago, it was 2 cents worth. And then it went down, the last time I redid that paper, it went down to a quarter of a penny's worth. And now we're at two-fifths of a penny. So here we go. Today, February 9th, 2026, the dollar, also known as the federal note, purchasing power, is two-fifths of a penny. I'm sure by now that most people know that the Federal Reserve is neither federal nor holds any reserves. It just holds debt. I'm not an economist, and I do not pretend to understand the corrupt system that the bar lawyers and the banksters have created in order to rob the people and destroy America. I listen to many people who talk about gold and silver and where all these things are heading. But what I see is that all these people are speaking about the dollar crisis from the perspective of the fictional economic world created by bar lawyers and banksters. with no real solution. They address a world of inflation, a fictional world that makes money out of nothing and therefore are just Fed notes of debt. These notes are leveraged over and over again until the Fed note are worthless. Today, the Fed notes are valued at 0.25. But even that is an illusion. The truth of the matter is it's not even worth that much. In this fictional world of inflation, it's just accumulated debt. And at the end of the day, the person holding the most Fed notes are the biggest losers. The Fed notes, also known as federal dollars, is just a paper debt, and that debt is about to be called. The collapse is imminent. It seems to me that the people talking about the crisis do not understand the world of gold and silver before inflation, a world of common sense and prosperity. They talk about quantitative tightening and quantitative easing, but they don't seem to know or see the solution. While enemies, both foreign and domestic, plan to collapse the economy and take us to war, and at the end of the day our Constitution, along with our unalienable rights, will be gone. While many will die in the war, and most people at home will starve and freeze to death as war hits our shores. But there is a solution. Both Q and President Trump said that gold will destroy the Fed. He has built a parallel system grounded in gold. The gold rallying that we see today is signaling the looming federal dollar collapse, the perfect storm of economic crisis. But there is a safety net, and prosperity will rise from the economic crisis forthwith. The Trump administration is in control of when and how the collapse will happen, as Trump maintains peace around the world through strength. And that's what we're going to endeavor to explain today. Although some people may not understand ratios, I will do my best to explain. Nevertheless, if you can't follow the math, keep in mind that many people watching this video can, and if I error, you will be assured that I will be corrected. So just follow the logic and trust the math. Okay, let's look at the ratios now. Ratio of price of ounce of gold divided by 20 equals the cost of an ounce of silver. That's the ratio between a silver dollar and a $20 gold piece. And 100 pennies divided by the cost of an ounce of silver gives the value of that Fed dollar. So if we go back, we look onto this chart, we go into 1913, we see that an ounce of silver cost $1. And the dollar and an ounce of gold cost $20. Therein is the ratio of 20-1. And so the full value of the dollar was $1. So that's when they started, the Federal Reserve came into being. During 1914 through 1918, during World War I, the Fed note started to decline. By 1920, it has lost 50% of its buying power. An ounce of silver was going for $2.02. An ounce of gold was going for $35.40. And the value of the dollar dropped to 49.5 cents, so 49 and a half cents. As we continue to go down, we see that the pricing of the cost of silver and gold was fluctuating. It started to go up a little bit, then down. And then it started to just, by 1965, at that point, it just continued to decline. There was no more, at least not on this chart, going up and down. So in 1965, we see that an ounce of silver was $3.18, and an ounce of gold was $63.60, which gave the dollar value of 31.4 cents. We go down, let's just drop down to 1980. In 1980, it took a pretty big decline. Ounce of silver was going for $8.32. An ounce of gold was $166.40. And the dollar then became worth 12 cents. And by 1990, the ounce of silver went to $13.20. An ounce of gold was $264. And the value of a dollar, purchasing value of a dollar, was 7.6 cents. So we continue on this chart, we pick up in 1995. An ounce of silver was $15.39. An ounce of gold was $307.80, which gave the value of a dollar 6.5 cents. When we get to 2006, an ounce of silver was $20.40, and an ounce of gold was $408, which brought the value of a dollar, its purchasing power, at 4.9 cents. When we get down to 2024, an ounce of silver was going for $132.50. And by the way, again, this is what silver should have been. To keep the markets going, to keep the economy happening, they had to keep the price of silver down. Same thing with copper. They had to keep the price of copper down. And I think they compensated for that by raising the value of the gold higher than it should be, and I think that's how they balanced it out. So in 2024, an ounce of silver should be about $132.50. And when we go over to the gold, it was $2,650, and that brought us to the value of the dollar as three-quarters of a penny, a three-quarter of 1 cent. And now in 2026, silver is $250 an ounce. And again, that's not the going. I think right now the silver is going for about $100 an ounce. But the gold is at $5,000. I know it was up to $5,000. It may have dropped a little bit. It's bouncing a little bit, but it's not going to go down much. It's going to continue to go up. And so that brought us to 2/5 of a penny. That's where the monetary value of a dollar is at this point. There is a monetary collapse is now imminent. So again, let's just take a look at this. In 1920, the Fed raised the prices of an ounce of gold from $20 to $40.40. And when the Fed dollar collapses, Trump will reset an ounce of gold from $40.40 to $20,000. And if we divide that by 20, it will equal the reset of an ounce of gold at $1,000 an ounce. And therein is the ratio 20 to 1. Now, I don't think that they're going to be able to collapse the economy without Trump permitting it or allowing it to happen. I think he's got a lot of things going on and he's preventing that collapse. Let me just make a correction here. You know, I should have said silver and not gold. So that was the price of silver versus gold. Holding it off to so it's really, I think, in his time schedule where this collapse is going to take place. But I do see that once we hit $10,000 an ounce of gold, and I don't think, I think we're going to reach that. I'm pretty sure we're going to reach that this year. I really think the whole collapse is going to happen this year. I think it's going to happen very soon, as a matter of fact. It could hold off till the election. That's a possibility. but it's better for us that it collapses quicker than later. Because we continue to suffer, you know, it's like just going on slow. It's like a slow burn here, you know, constantly suffering from all of this inflation, trying to keep up with our bills and so on and so forth, because there is a plan to fix this whole problem. Okay, let's look at the price comparison between 1913 and 2024. I'm choosing 2024 because, you know, going through 24 and into 25, right until we hit 26, you know, pretty much a lot of things stayed the same. There was a big change in gas and a lot of other metals, and maybe that has a lot to do with them being able to kind of work out their balance sheets, because gold is one of the key things, but that may be a little higher. They may have raised that goal a little higher in order to keep the price of silver down, because silver is so important to the market. So in 2026, which is where we're at now, gold is at about $5,000 an ounce, and the ratio of 20 to 1 would bring silver down to $250 an ounce. If you take a dollar, which is 100 cents, and you divide it by $250 Fed notes, That would bring the value of a dollar to 40% of one penny. And 40% of one penny is two-fifths of a penny. Now, when we hit 10,000, and we could, that could be the collapsing number. And if it's not the collapsing number, you know, could be before that even. But if it's not the collapsing number, it's not going to be very long before it starts to really escalate coming up to the $20,000. It's going to be very quickly at that point. But we are heading for that collapse. And I do believe it's going to happen this year. It may be looking to try to do this during the election period. I don't know what's in the mind of Trump on his strategy. So, I mean, that's a possibility, too, because there's a lot of other things going that he's dealing with. But anyway, you know, going back to $10,000 an ounce, which I don't think we're far away from that, divided by 20 will bring us to $500 for an ounce of silver. Take $1, 100 pennies, divided by 500 Fed notes. That brings us down to 20% of 1 cent, which is three-fifths of a penny. Now, here's the absolute collapse. Whether we ever reach this or not, this is absolute collapse. At $20,000 an ounce of gold, the ratio 1 to 20 would be $1,000 for an ounce of silver. $1, 100 cents, divided by $1,000. And yeah, I'd like to make another correction here. That 100 pennies divided by $500 in Fed notes is 20% of 1%. And that would actually bring us down to one-fifth of a penny, not three-fifths. So, you know, I'll have to redo this video before I put it up online, but at least I'm having the opportunity now to see what errors we might have. But okay, let's continue. Fed notes would equal 10% of 1 cent, which would make our the value of a dollar one-tenth of a penny. So let's take a look to see what the prices were. And again, these prices for 2024, you know, again, I know that they got a real big problem, you know, trying to work all this out and everybody trying to adjust their prices, you know, all the markets. At the same time, they're trying to keep their prices down. They get the sales, and it's just a struggle, okay? And so there's a strain on everyone, both the seller and the buyer. But in 1913, these are 1913 prices versus 2024 prices. A loaf of bread in 1913 was 6 cents a loaf. Today's price is about $2.50, and that's if you buy like you know, I shop at Shopper, Stop and Shop, you know, and Stop and Shop brand bread, you can get that for $2.49. That's $2.50. But Wonder bread and other breads are like $4, $3.99. $4 and even more than $4. So these prices are off quite a bit on the 24 prices, and it also depends on where you live. A gallon of gas back in 1913 was 12 cents. 2024 it's $3.34 because of supply and demand, and Trump is raising that up. I know gas has dropped down today to about where I live, it's $2.91. Okay, in other places it's less than that. I hear that there are some places that it's just under $2, so, I mean, that's pretty good. But nevertheless, gas being a commodity is also a big control of the economy and what's going on. It's like really working with gold and silver, same thing, big play in the economy and the prices of things. A gallon of milk in 1913 was 35 cents. Today you're looking over $4. A dozen of eggs was 37 cents. Today, or 2024, was $4.99. A pound of cheese was 22 cents. And in 2024, it was $7.99. A pound of butter was 41 cents in 1913 versus $5.50. A pound of sugar was 6 cents versus $1.15 per pound. Okay. A sirloin steak per pound was 24 cents. Today's price is $7.29, and I see a lot more than that, even 10, 12 bucks a pound, even higher than that. So it's really got expensive. I know when I go out and buy dog bones are like $6 and change a pound. I mean, these people are evil. We used to get that for free. Why would they charge us money for that? But they like to grind it up and put it into the meat because we're suckers. And also, well, they'll sell it to some people who buy. Maybe they're going to do some stew or something, you know. Or people will buy them for their dogs. So they're making a killing on that. And that should be free. Okay. Bacon in 1913, 25 cents. Today, over $5.99, and that's for the cheapest bacon you could buy, at least to where I'm living. A pound of ham was 25 cents. Today is $5.50. Flour a pound was 3 cents a pound. Today, $1.34. Coffee a pound was 30 cents. Now it's $7.80. Matter of fact, it's even higher than that. Right now, it's like $13, $14. Some of it's like $19 a pound of coffee, where I'm at. A pound of potatoes was 2 cents. And right now, we're in 2024, about $4.99. A new car, 1913, cost $490. Today, it's $48,397. That's a big jump, huh? A new house was $3,395 in 1913. And today, your average house is about $317,000. Average rent per month in 13 was about $83. I remember when I was a kid, my parents were paying $60 for a, what was it, three-bedroom apartment. And they were paying $60 a month. But in any event, in 1913, 83, and that's probably in Manhattan, because we're going to look a little bit at that. Today, you know, a price of an apartment is $1,521. Dow Jones Index was $78. And in 24, it was $44,910. Now, again, these prices are jumping all over the place because they're really having a hard time trying to make this market work. Manufacturers, people are selling, are having a hard time trying to figure out the prices. It's constantly fluctuating. The gold is moving up, and they're trying to catch up on it. And again, there is a relationship between the metals and also gas, oil, very, very important, also plays a role as part of that whole package, which creates the, you know, what the inflation would be, or where they can try to control inflation by raising it up here and lowering it over there. Like I said, silver and copper, they got to keep as low as possible to keep the market going. Otherwise, it would just die altogether. So that's why the gold will push up high, and oil or gas will be pushed up high. Let's go up here. I didn't think I'd get this. The average yearly income in 1913 was $1,296. That was $24.92 a week, and people lived good. Average yearly income in 2026 is $42,000. That was about $815 a week. And I can tell you, anybody living on $815 a week is really having a tough time survive. So it's getting really bad. We're getting close. Okay, the prices in 1945, when the Fed note had lost more than 50% of its value at that point. And so these are kind of high prices right here, which we're going to talk about, because we really need to go back to the 1913 prices. But this is the information I was able to get as far as looking at these type of things, particularly in Manhattan. A choice, which is very expensive, Manhattan. A choice apartment at 125th Street East, no, I'm sorry, 125 East 93rd Street, that's between Park and Lexington, it's a good neighborhood, okay, was $125. That was a choice apartment. A three-bedroom apartment in the same building went for $165 a month. Okay, a good dinner in a nice restaurant cost about $1. Lunch in a Chinese restaurant at Columbus Circle was 65 cents. A healthful lunch in the amount of at the Automat on 43rd Street at Broadway cost about 35 to 50 cents. A new movie along with a show at a famous Paramount Theater cost 85 cents. A ride on the subway to any place from Manhattan to the Bronx to Riverdale, anywhere, and to Coney Island, cost a nickel. A ferry ride to Staten Island or New Jersey cost a nickel. It cost 3 cents to mail a first-class letter. And for a nickel, you could buy a hamburger or a chocolate malted or a subway stop at Times Square. And at the Alden Theater on Broadway at 66th Street, I could see a double feature, two movies, for 15 cents. And that's about what it cost, maybe 15 or 20 cents when I was a kid. and we went to the movies. And, you know, we would go see, we'd go to the matinee, you'd get an hour or hour and a half of cartoons, and then you'd get two movies after that. You go with 75 cents, and you're able to buy popcorn, you get soda, and you paid for your way in, and maybe a little bit of candy, and you still had a few cents in your pocket. And that's going back into the late 50s, early 60s. So the sky is falling, I'll tell you that. Quantitative tightening is contractionary monetary policy tool applied by central banks to decrease the amount of liquidity or money supply in the economy. A central bank implements quantitative tightening by reducing the financial assets it holds on its balance sheets by selling them into the financial market, which decreases asset prices and raises interest rates. Quantitative tightening is the reverse of quantitative easing, where the central bank prints money and uses it to buy assets in order to raise asset prices and stimulate the economy. Quantitative tightening is rarely used by central banks and has only been employed after prolonged periods of Greenspan put type stimulus, where the creation of too much central banking liquidity has led to a risk of uncontrolled inflation. Example, in 2008, 2018, and 2022. Rather than reinforcing the Fed's authority, quantitative tightening risks triggering the very crisis that exposes its fragility. This is the opening Donald Trump and Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent are waiting for constitutionally. Trump cannot order Powell to cut rates or end quantitative tightening, but he doesn't have to. Instead, Secretary Bessent can deploy tools already within the Treasury authority to work around the Fed, providing liquidity on Treasury terms and building a parallel system that gradually displaces the Fed's monopoly, which we're going to look a little more at in the next few pages here. J.P. Morgan faces silver manipulation claims after a historic 32% crash wipes out $2.5 trillion in silver short. So they are short $2.5 trillion. And the question is where did all that silver go? The shocking Economics Times report explains why silver has finally been unleashed after decades of suppression. We have always known that J.P. Morgan would flip along when the end game finally arrived for silver manipulation. The gold rally, which is happening now, it's really going to start building, signals looming dollar collapse. Forbes reports the Bitcoin price, which has plummeted to nearly $80,000 per Bitcoin from its peak of $126,000 in October, is battling to save its reputation as digital gold, worse than 2008 financial crisis. Gold surges trigger serious U.S. dollar warnings as Bitcoin prices suddenly drop. Worst case scenario? Crypto suddenly braces for a massive $1 trillion Bitcoin price crash. I have no clue on how people think that Bitcoin has any power, any authority, any leverage. It's backed by air, nothing. Only the people on the top make money on this. And they're going to start losing. Everyone else is going to start losing. I think that's coming up for a big crash. Okay, there's a crisis of confidence in the U.S. dollar. Kyle Roda, a senior market analyst at Capital.com, said in comments reported by Reuters, gold and silver are warning about a bigger crisis that's going to hit either later this year or maybe next year. No, it's going to hit this year. I'm convinced of that. We are headed for a U.S. dollar crisis and a sovereign debt crisis. Economists and gold investors Peter Schiff told Fox Business, pointing the spiraling $38 trillion U.S. debt pile and the dollar slump into 2026. Economists warn coming financial crisis will make 2008 look like a Sunday school picnic. That's a crash. Peter Schiff says the gold rally signals looming dollar collapse. As gold prices keep rising, American economist Peter Schiff says investors should view the rally as more than a hedge, calling it a warning that inflation is speeding up, the U.S. dollar is losing global trust, and a major economic reckoning is, well, he says, maybe near. It is no doubt in my mind, definitely is near. Okay, so, you know, again, the prices out there that you're buying things at with the relationship to the gold, particularly the gold, and we're going to see silver going up, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. We're going to see huge inflation. And again, I think it's going to happen very quickly because that'll be a, you know, like boiling a slow boil. It's going to be really hard to go through that time period if we can continue to allow things to continue the way they are, and inflation keeps getting greater, all your bills become more and more money, and food becomes more money, and all the other things that you need become more and more money, and people just can't make it. I mean, anybody on Social Security, forget about it. They're not making it. And anybody making $20 an hour, that's nothing. That's garbage. It just doesn't work no more. People can't survive. With two people working in a household making $20 an hour apiece, maybe they got a chance of doing reasonably okay, but even that's going to fail as this gold continues to go and rise. The perfect storm of crisis. As quantitative tightening drains reserves, the broader economy is already cracking. Housing market crunch. Too many houses, too few buyers. And mortgage rates stuck at suffocating levels. Commercial real estate implosion. Office vacancies and refinancing cliffs threaten cascading defaults. Repo fragility. With reserve repurchases agreements nearly empty, quantitative tightening is now hitting bank reserves, raising the risk of a funding seizure. High rates entrenched. Powell insists on keeping rates higher for longer, even as markets buckle. I believe they're trying to crash the market. Taken together, quantitative tightening doesn't solve inflation. It creates a perfect storm. The Fed looks like it's draining the lifeblood of the economy while refusing to change course. Keep on this track, we will be heading toward the economic crisis. This is exactly what the globalists and the deep state wants. They want to impede Trump's progress and stifle economic recovery. Through this, they can organize chaos and have an opportunity to regain control. Quantitative tightening is Powell's last stand. His financial attempt to maintain control by starving the system of liquidity. But in trying to prove the Fed's independence, Powell is also tightening into fragility, ensuring that his very policies set the stage for failure. History has shown that when liquidity runs dry, markets do not wait patiently for the Fed to act. They seize, they panic, and they seek alternatives. We're in trouble. But again, there is a plan. Trump's built a parallel system grounded in gold. Trump and Bessette cannot constitutionally command the Fed to cut rates or end quantitative tightening. The Federal Reserve Act protects that independence. But what they can do, and what they are preparing to do, is build a parallel system of liquidity provisions outside of Powell's reach, one rooted not in fiat promise, but in hard assets and market demands. That parallel system would be grounded in 50-year gold and Bitcoin-backed bonds, creating a new class of hard-backed collateral. Now, in this paper that I put together here, I didn't even consider Bitcoin as part of the backing, and it plays some role, I guess, but I don't think that's going to continue very long anyway, and it may crash and just go out even before this whole thing is over anyway. It may crash with the dollar. I mean, that's my opinion. I don't have any knowledge in that area. But logic on the way things should work, that's pretty simple. Okay, so the 50-year gold and Bitcoin-backed bonds, creating a new class of hard-backed collateral. The exchange stabilization fund used as a treasury lever to inject liquidity directly into stressed markets. A treasury-backed stablecoin, programmable and globally adaptive, circulating alongside and eventually in place of Fed liabilities. A campaign of investigations and political pressure weakening Powell's legitimacy. At first, this treasury system would coexist with Fed. It would be a supplement, an experiment, a modernization project, but over time, as Powell's quantitative tightening shrinks the Fed into irrelevance and Bessent's asset-backed architecture grows in adoption, the balance of power shifts. Liquidity starved markets will naturally gravitate to the safer, more transparent, and more market-driven rails offered by Treasury. This is not the end of central banking by legislation. It is displacement by evolution. Just as the IMF SRD basket offered a multilateral alternative to national reserves, a U.S. Treasury SDR-style system rooted in gold, resources, assets, bitcoins, and treasuries would become the preferred anchor for global liquidity. Unlike the Fed's closed technocratic model, this system would function more like a free market where hard-backed bonds, sovereign wealth assets, and digital rails compete for adoption. And once that shift occurs, the Federal Reserve no longer needs to be abolished. It simply becomes unnecessary. Gold shall destroy the Fed. As Q said, gold shall destroy the Fed. And it looks more and more like this is the blueprint. And in 2025, or actually 2026, it may already be the constitutional plan in motion. Gold and silver, not being susceptible to inflation, had a ratio of 20 to 1. That's what it was before the Federal Reserve seized control of our money in 1913, and was the ratio going back to when we were colonies and even before that. In 1913, the Fed note was valued as 1 ounce of silver, whereas 20 Fed notes was $20, although there is a slight plus and minus value due to supply and demand. Gold and silver ratio has always been stable at 20 to 1. By 1920, due to inflation caused by borrowing from the Fed, raised the prices of gold to $40.40, thereby decreasing the value of the dollar by 50% to 49.5 cents. On June 4, 1963, President John F. Kennedy signed Executive Order 1110. This executive order amended Executive Order 10289 by delegating to the Secretary of the Treasury the President's authority to issue silver certificates under the Thomas Amendment of the Agricultural Adjustment Act, as amended by the Gold Reserve Act. The order allowed the Secretary to issue silver certificates, which is backed by gold and silver reserves, in exchange for federal notes, thereby destroying the Fed. So it was a dollar-to-dollar Fed exchange. And the people really would have been benefiting from it. It did happen for a short period of time, but they quashed that very quickly after they killed the president. Okay, the U.S. total debt outstanding is currently around $38.6 trillion and breaks down into two main categories. Debt held by the public, okay, individuals, institutions, the Federal Reserve, foreign investors, etc., is around $30.97 trillion. Intragovernmental holdings, this is debt the government owes to itself, primarily through trust funds like Social Security, Medicare, federal employee retirement funds, and other governmental accounts. It accounts for about $7.6 trillion. President Trump's monetary reset is a gold-backed dollar. Q said gold shall destroy the Fed, and this is the blueprint of Trump's constitutional plan in motion. Gold reserves is $8 1,133.46 metric tons, or about 261.5 million troy ounces. The official book value fixed by Congress in 1973 at $42.22 per troy ounce. Boy, that is really, really low. When it was said they're selling for $5,000. Silver, approximately 7,075,171 fine troy ounces, about 220 metric tons. Book statutory value valued at the fixed rate of 1.29 cents per fine troy ounce. President Trump is planning to revalue gold at $20,000 an ounce. Therein is the collapse point. And silver would then be at $1,000, thereby destroying the Fed. The president, with congressional authority, could reprice U.S. gold reserve from 42 per ounce, which is a relic of the Bret Woods era, to $20,000. This would instantly generate approximately $5.2 trillion in new treasury capital without issuing new debt. If we look at the gold, 261.5 million troy ounces at $20,000 an ounce, it brings us to $5,230,000,000. If we look at silver, 7,075,000 ounces of troy ounces at $1,000 an ounce, that would be $7,075,171. Okay, so if we bring that together, that's a total of $7,237,517,000. Okay, when we look at silver certificates, the dollar versus the Fed notes upon the collapse, the total Federal Reserve note, including bank holdings, are about $19 trillion. 5 trillion gold, silver equals 4 to 1 ratio, which calculates the $4 per reserve notes will get you one silver certificate. So what I think is going to happen, because this is what Kennedy was doing, but he was able to do 1-to-1. But because of inflation and all the problems, it'll be 4-to-1, most likely. And which would mean you would have to give them, if you had $1,000, okay, you'd have to give whatever the number would be. You have to give $4 for every one silver certificate. But the value of that silver certificate would be huge. So the $4, on the one hand, it would be a loss of four to one, but on the other hand, the value would be really unbelievable. So I think the exchange rate would be 4-to-1. $4, if you have, like I said, if you got $1,000 put away, you would get $250 in silver certificates for that $1,000. Okay, so that's a really, really great deal. So when the dollar totally collapses, the ratio between the Fed note and the silver certificate might be 1,000 to 1. Let's say a candy bar might be $20. You know, when you got in a collapsed dollar, it may be $20 for a candy bar in Fed notes. In contrast, the candy bar with 50% more candy, because they're so tiny. When I was a kid, they were huge. Might be 2 cents in silver. So that's the difference. You can be paying $20 in Fed notes on a collapsed economy, and if you have a silver certificate, you'd spend that, get 2 cents for that, and you'd get 98 cents back. Therefore, it would go to the store and purchase groceries at, let's say, $20,000 in Federal Reserve notes, and the same purchase would cost $20 in silver certificates. When this happens, people will figure this out quite quickly. using the 1913 prices, which was before inflation, and the following examples would take place. So when we look at these things, again, the market will adjust very quickly. They'll understand this very quickly. And so, you know, you would go in to buy a loaf of bread, and it may have two prices on it, you know. One might see $60 to buy a loaf of bread. But if you have a silver certificate, you could buy it for 6 cents. A gallon of gas would go for 12 cents in opposed to $120, because that's where the inflation would take us in a collapsed market. A gallon of milk would be 35 cents in opposed to $350. Eggs, 37 to $370. Cheese, 22 cents to $220. Butter, 41 cents to $410, and so on. Ham, a pound of ham, 25 cents versus $250. Potatoes, a 5-pound bag of potatoes for 2 cents versus $20. And these Fed notes may even be more than that. And that's what we might see at the store. You might see two prices, okay? But you would be able to take your Fed notes, bring them to the bank, and exchange them for silver certificates. And again, I think it'll be 4-to-1. For every $4, you get one silver certificate. On the one hand, it's a loss. And when you think about it, it's a 75% loss, kind of. But with what's going on, it would be one heck of a benefit. I mean, you go out and buy gold and silver, you're going to pay a lot more than that, really, to get that gold and silver than you would on the exchange for that. You know, I've been telling everybody for a long time, save your change because it'll have true value. So if you got lots of change, I think that's going to be true value. You're going to be able to take it. Well, it's going to be used in the market. We're going to be using nickels, dimes, quarters, and pennies, half dollars, silver dollars. Whether they got silver or whatever the makeup is, it doesn't matter. It's going to have face value because they're all U.S. coins to begin with. So Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1, no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender, gold and silver coin tender in payment of debts. And I put together pictures of real money in here, you know. We see the silver certificate here, the dollar. We have the silver dollar. Whether it's silver or not, it'll have the power of silver dollar, okay. You have the gold $20 piece over there. Again, that'll have the power of gold, though, $20 gold piece. You got the half a dollar, the quarter, the dime, and the nickel. All of that will have power and purchasing power. So again, there is a plan, and I think it's going to be a very simple plan to correct the problem. People will understand this quite quickly. The market will understand it quite quickly because prices will change. I mean, you may go to get gas at, I forget what the price was, what, 13, 14 cents a gallon? I mean, that's where it should be going down to. Going back when we go back to real money. And so, you know, if you're earning $2,000 a year, you're living good, okay? And again, I remember being a kid, a dollar was worth a lot. I mean, we'd buy a pizza pie, a huge pizza pie in New York City. I mean, it was a 3-foot pizza pie, and it would be $1.15 or $1.10 for the pie, I think it was. And I think it was 15 cents for a slice. Again, prices are quite different when we go to the past to where they are today. But that's how much money they stole from us. They stole us, and these people need to go to jail. The other thing is that Trump is going to be working with other things, you know. He had made a statement recently that if we were to just stop all of the abuse that people are stealing money from the government, which is our money, okay, just by stopping that, we're taking in more than enough to maintain the budget that we have right now, more than enough, which means there'd be excess, okay? He talks about dividends, okay? And dividends is something that companies will give to their investors or something. You get to a certain point and then they have excess profit, and they divide it out and give it to the people in dividends. And so Trump is talking about all kinds of different things of that nature. So I think the debt, with all of this going on and the work that Trump is doing to bring everything back economically to where it belongs, I think when you apply the tariffs Okay, again, there's going to be a huge amount of profit coming into the United States. As Trump said, you know, going back into the past, I mean, there were times when they had so much money, they didn't even know what to do with it. Okay, well, I'll tell you, he knows, we'll give it to the people. There's going to be a lot of benefit here. You know, utilities might become free at some point. That's a possibility. So I think the debt's going to be paid off quite quickly. I think by the time Trump finishes this term, his 4 years, he's got another 3 years to go, but by the time he finishes his 4 years, I think the debt will be paid off, and people will be doing very well. The market will be moving, and with all the business that he brought in. The other side of this coin is you take people like J.P. Morgan, the Rothschilds. You take all of these rich companies that have been involved in fraud, especially all those people involved in the Federal Reserve. You know, they're going to be going to jail. Some of them, I think, is going to end up on the end of the short rope, but it's up to juries on that. But in any event, okay, once they arrest these people, well, they're going to have to seize the property that they have stolen. So whatever liquidity they have, gold, silver, anything, okay, it's going to be taken from them, you know, because after all, as Trump says, you know, you rob the diamond store, you get caught, got to give it back. So, I mean, that's probably going to amount to trillions of dollars with what they have, properties and liquidity and all of this stuff, all of these investments they have. These corporations will be sold off, companies. And you bring all that that value together, that's going to be huge to take out the debt. So, you know, the plan that they had was not to do anything like this. It's just that we would fall into a debt. We'd owe a whole bunch of money. The economy would collapse. People would be starving. We'd be going to war. By the end of the day, by the time they finish, you know, people living in that didn't go to war, here at home, I mean, we'll probably be, it would be attacked on our shores. People would be dying from not having food, maybe from even freezing to death, especially during the winter. They're looking to kill us all. That's their plan anyway. They've been doing that with our pharmaceuticals, with our air, with our water, with our food. I mean, there's nothing but poison everywhere you turn. Again, I think when you pull all this together, the amount of money involved here, I think the debt's going to be paid off quite quickly. And some of that debt we don't have to pay off, because some of that debt goes to the Federal Reserve. Why would we give them a penny? We need to be taking everything the Federal Reserve does have away from them and give back to the people. So anyway, that's where I think we're at. I think that's where we're heading. And I think we're heading for a really great time. But it's still going to be a little rough till we reach this point. But I do think before the end of the year, in my heart, in my mind, there's no doubt this is going to take place. But it could happen quite quickly. It could happen a couple of months from now. Could happen around the election time. Don't know. But it's happening. All right. Okay, that brings us to the end of that video. I have a lot of corrections to make on that, so you know, I will make a lot of corrections, and then I'll post this video up, and I'll put it out in an email where the location of this video is going to be at, and people can listen to it again. You know, when we look at these things, you know, I'm thinking 4-to-1 ratio concerning paying back to the people. I do think eventually we're going to get 1-to-1. And the reason why I say, let's just think 1-to-1, but it's not going to be that much, though, in the beginning. I think as time goes on through dividends, we're going to get a lot more because we have been injured. They've been robbing us since the day we were born. And then now it's time, you know, for them to pay the toll. But, you know, it could be that we get only 5-to-1. Or maybe 10-to-1. I mean, even 10-to-1 would be huge. Everybody would be living well, whatever money they have in the bank or whatever cash they have on hand. Now, as far as coins are concerned, I think that would be automatic. You know, there's not going to be any kind of a ratio. It's going to be a quarter is going to be worth a true quarter as if you were in 1913. But maybe they'll adjust it. Maybe they'll have to adjust it to 10-to-1 and eventually work things out more as it goes. So it's going to be progressive. You know, Trump is building one heck of an economy. He's got trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars coming in. I think it's something like $18 or $19 trillion of new business coming in. Thousands of corporations opening up in the United States, bringing home a lot of corporations that we've been losing over the past 50 plus years, because that was part of their plan, is really to really, you know, knock the legs out from underneath the United States. So we have all of that, and you know he's got to have a plan to protect that. And this is the only logical plan. And this logic comes from going back to the days of Kennedy. And I do remember this. I guess I was about 12 years old when this happened. I'm taking a guess. Let me think. Two, three. Yeah, maybe 11 or 12 years old I was. And I remember my father coming home, and he took out of his wallet some dollars, and he showed me they were silver certificates. And he says, when you go out there and you spend some money and you get some change on $5 or something like that, you know, you make sure it's a silver certificate and don't take nothing else but. And you could go to the bank. That's what he did. He went to the bank and got silver certificates. Now, I was young, and I don't know how long that went for. It was a very short period of time went for. But the plan was 1-to-1. And remember, back then, a 1-to-1 ratio on that payback, I think the 1960s, I forget, we had looked in the charts what the value was, what the ratio was, what the value of a dollar was back in those days. Of course, you'd buy a lot more, as I mentioned, you know, back in those days, as I said, you know, I would go out and buy a slice of pizza for 15 cents or 10 cents, I think it was 15 cents, go to the movies with 75 cents, I mentioned that earlier. And with 75 cents, I'd get into the movies. As I mentioned, I'd watch a whole bunch of cartoons, an hour, hour and a half of cartoons. And then they'd have two movies back-to-back, you know, with intermission between them. And you'd be able to buy your popcorn, get your soda and some candy, and still walk out with some change. You know, go out and play stickball and maybe go down and get an RC Cola or a Coke or something. And that's what money was really, really, and that was still an inflated dollar, where we lost more than 50% at that point in time. I think it was down to like 40% or 30% of the dollar is what we had then. And so that was pretty powerful even back then. You know, my father was the only one who worked in the house, okay, you know, there was five children, and of course, my father and my mother, so there were seven of us, and he was able to, and he was a blue-collar worker, and he was able to pay the bills. If I recall, I think a rent was $60 a month, okay? And in the summer, my father, he worked the rails. He was a foreman. And he would get 6 weeks vacation. And we'd take 4 weeks to go to the shore. We rent out a floor on, you know, in a small hotel, you know, like a bill, like, you know, not some big hotel, but this is a little hotels on the shore. Out in Ocean Grove, New Jersey, near Asbury Park. Anybody familiar with that? But anyway, we'd rent the floor, the back floor, you know, half of the first floor in the back of this hotel, where we had our own private porch and everything. And my father was able to be able to provide for that on one salary. So money was powerful, you know. You didn't make as much as if you're thinking today in the inflation. But the power of the money was just unbelievable. So, you know, again, it's a big, big, huge change coming up. And again, I could be wrong on the $4. That's kind of a guess of mine. And the reason I came to the guess of $4 was because of making the ratio between the amount of liquidity that was that the government and the bank held all together, you know, without you know, with the cash flow and everything, and then putting together, of course, whatever amounts of, I forget how that worked out, but anyway, whatever was out there in cash and in the banks, and that was equal to the amount of silver dollars that could be produced by the $5+ trillion. So when you work that out, you could work 1-to-1, but I figured 4-to-1. That could have been done 1-to-1, but I don't think it could happen that quick. There's got to be some leverage that he could work with as times go by and get better. And again, we'd received in dividends, and I think really powerfully, I really do believe we're going to be getting utilities for free. You know, Musk has put up all of these satellites, and he has covered the entire Earth with satellites. He was putting them up 20 at a time for quite a few years. That was working and being used also, I believe, in the dome that Trump was talking about. But in any event, he put all those satellites up there, and he's talking about in 2026, okay, so the middle of this year, he's offering, I think it's called the Pi phone. So he's offering that phone, I think it's $300, if I recall, is the price he's looking to get. And when you buy that Pi phone, you can expect, so he says, that could last 20 years, 20-year phone life. It had nanotechnology that even if the glass, got cracked or whatever, it would repair itself because he's doing it with nanotechnology. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And in any event, with that $300, once you buy that, you have free phone calls, free internet service, period, off of that phone. Because he's given that all for free. And that's been a plan of his for quite some time. I heard about this a couple of years ago. Didn't hear about the phone, but I heard about the free internet. And of course, he's got that set up where you can get like these little satellite dishes, I guess you'd call them, where you could be anywhere. You know, you could be lost on an island somewhere in the middle of the Pacific, and if you had a cell phone on you, you'd be able to make a call and call for help. I mean, that's amazing. Because he has blanketed the entire Earth. So I think we're coming into some really great times, but we're going to have to go through some pain before we get there. And that's my take on what's going on. So if anybody has a comment or a correction or anything to offer on this, mic is open. The queue is open. It's a *6 and 1 if you're on a phone, and if you don't have a browser, it should be a button. We do have one person in the queue, so we'll take that person, and hopefully others will get into the queue. Any of the leadership want to pipe in on this, feel free. I'll hold off on opening, taking the first person in the queue to see if anybody wants to pipe anything in. Okay. All right, we'll take our first caller here. It looks like it's Linda from Virginia. We got another person. We got two people in the queue now. Linda from Virginia, you got the mic. Go right ahead, Linda.
Hi, John.
How you doing?
Oh, that was a good program. Thanks for what was the name of that video?
Well, it's not up yet, and I haven't really settled on a name. Maybe people can suggest what I might call it. I want to call it something that would get people's attention. I was thinking of calling it 3/5 of a penny, but I don't know that people are going to understand that. So if anybody can think of a good name, we'll post it up on both YouTube and Rumble. And once we do that, we'll put word in the next week's newsletter where it's located at. And maybe I'll probably send out an email anyway, just so that people know that video will be available. But I do want to redo the video because there was quite a few mistakes in there. I was working on that today, and I was in between sharing this and not sharing this because I hadn't had time to really sit down and listen to see what kind of mistakes I might have in there. So I do want to make the repairs. So if you got an idea of a name that might catch people's attention, share it with us, and anybody else do the same. Back to you, Linda.
I'll give some thought to it. My comment is really not about that. Last week I called in about.
Before you go on, let me just say this: if anybody has a good idea of what we might name this video. You can send your comment to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org. And again, I need to find a catchy name, something that will catch people's attention. But back to you. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Linda.
Last week I called in about trying to buy a heating and air conditioning system. And I ended up ensnared in this ridiculous situation. There were predatory practices, and just it was the installation was bad, and it doesn't work, and all this. and I've asked them to remove it. I canceled the contract within the time frame they specified, and I asked them to remove the system. And
I think we talked about a notice and demand, if I recall, right?
Yes, I'm working on the notice and demand. I am working on that. I just want to give a brief update. They claim that they're going to remove the system, but then when I respond, they say I need to sign documents. The last message I got from them was basically stripping me of my rights with hold harmless agreements and non-disclosure, and I won't sign any of that. So it's a catch-22 situation that they've put me in. I have no furnace. We've had, I don't know, near zero temperatures here. And
let me ask you a question on that. We got some serious weather here too. Goodness, we had, I think it was -11 degrees at one point, and the wind chill in some places was -20 degrees, and in New York we've never felt so much. But let me ask you a question. Let me see if I understand this right. Correct me if I'm wrong. They installed the system, but you never paid a penny at this point. Is that correct?
What happened was they do this thing where they come out and they do the presentation, they do the contract, they do everything in
one. Oh, that's right. They got the money from the bank then. And it wasn't
they do everything in one swoop. And he mentioned when it came to discussing, the financing, he said, we have a 12-month no interest loan. I said, no, I don't want that. I know they have high interest. I said, I have a very high credit score. I have an excellent credit score. And I said, I have multiple offers to get no interest loans, and I also could pay cash. So there was all that. And,
but you never signed anything, though, correct?
No, let me tell you. They keep on and they keep on. It's high pressure. It's very high pressure sales tactics.
Yeah, let me ask you the question one more time. You know, they came in and they made the install. They offered you this no interest loan, probably for a year or two or whatever. I don't know. And then did you ever sign an agreement with them at all?
Well, what happened was I asked him if they had a no prepayment penalty. And he showed me where there was no prepayment penalty. He said, you might as well take it for now.
Right.
In my mind, I was thinking I can always do something else later penalty.
But did
so
you
I did.
Anything?
I did sign something.
Do you have what you signed?
No, they didn't. I asked him. I asked. It was on a tablet. And I couldn't see anything. He had control of the tablet, I never had the tablet except the sign and the initial.
Well, bear in witness. Bear in mind here.
Wait a minute. I asked him if he. So I got nervous. I said I was very anxious about it. I said, "Are you going to give me copies?" And he said, "Yes." He never gave me paper hard copies.
Did you make note or send anything to the Better Business Bureau concerning the situation, making the point?
I have filed with the Virginia SEC Consumer Group. I filed with the Virginia AG.
I have filed
with the CFPB. I have filed with the BBB. I filed with the DOJ.
Okay,
and I have filed with the FTC.
Okay, listen, I there's a couple of questions, and until you continue, I need to understand a couple of things, okay? So when you filed with those people, I presumed you said very specifically, or you didn't, even with just at least one, I don't know, but did you make it very specific that you signed the tablet, that you couldn't even read the tablet, they said they'd give you a copy, they never gave you a copy, did you say those things to those places that you made your report? Because that
yes,
is
all of it, all
okay.
of it.
So
John,
that is,
there is so much. There is so much predatory practice here. You just would not believe it.
Oh, I would. I would. Believe me, I know.
What this is, I'm going to tell you what this is. This is a triad. I said it's like Russian nesting dolls. There's a front company, a local private, like they pose as a local private company. So you think, oh, okay, they had a good reputation. So you go there, and what it is that's just a front. And then that company is tied to a parent company. In this case, it's called ARS. And then they're also tied to a finance company.
Yeah, look, I'm very familiar. This is a common thing. This has been around for a long time. You know, the really big things going on was done by the gypsies, and they'd come out and do home improvement.
This originated with the solar industry.
Well, it actually goes further.
They still have backlog, thousands and thousands and thousands of cases.
Yeah, but look,
where the predatory.
I'm telling you, it goes back further than that. I'd mentioned last
time
about this.
But,
you know,
but it's changed. It's changed somewhat because of the collusion and because of the technology. You know, it's a little different.
Well, yeah, I'm sure it's easy for them to hide. They like you said, you know, they move things around. They got companies inside of companies. You know, and here's the key thing. There's a whole bunch of things that they're really in trouble about. Even if they have a signature on you, okay, nevertheless, they got the funding from some financial institution that was making the loan, okay? They got the funding from that. And that, like I said, should have been a two-party check. How they got that, I have no clue because I've
done... Those are private equity companies or venture
capital.
But
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
They are tied to Wall Street, Goldman Sachs and all that, who have the investors of BlackRock and Vanguard.
Yeah, Linda, listen, I'm trying to explain something to you, though. This is extremely important that you understand what I'm saying, because this becomes a huge fraud situation here.
And, it is.
And, right, but let me explain something, and this is what you have to think about and know, because you have to articulate this in your paperwork, especially with your notice and demand. The bottom line is, I've been, like I said, I was a contractor for over 40 years. Okay, and I've done a lot, and I did work sometimes with some financial institution, but even if I didn't have financial institution working with, sometimes a person would come and they'd come in with a loan from their financial institution. But in all cases, in every case, for as long as I've been in business, it's always a two-party check. They never give the check to the contractor complete, nor do they give it to the homeowner complete. They would bring the check, and the check is always delivered to the homeowner, okay? And you have to then negotiate that with your contractor, because it requires both signatures for that, okay? Now,
well,
you can...
Wait a minute. You're losing me, because there's no check.
No, I understand that. What I'm saying, there was a check. You just don't know about it. They had to receive the money somehow, okay, from the financial institution. It requires two signatures. That's the way it is. That's just the way, at least in New York, and I would believe it's all over the United States, that's the way it's got to go. You can't. They can't file for paperwork and contract against the payment direct. That just doesn't happen that way, okay? So they've already been paid for this. And then they want you to sign some kind of paper holding them harmless, okay? But what's going to happen, someone's eventually going to chase on you for money because they gave them the money.
Well, I got an update on that too, but go ahead.
What update on that? Go ahead.
There is a Virginia AG, the Virginia AG. This is 10 days after I filed my dispute, or 10 days before. I'm sorry, 10 days before. The Virginia AG filed a 146-page complaint against these lenders, and the one I'm dealing with is named as one of them. There's five lenders, and there was two owners in it, and they're going after. Evidently, they're naming the owners now. And what I don't understand is the front company, the private business, went bankrupt in 2022. So I'm kind of like, why is the Virginia AG just now pursuing this? It's kind of odd. But anyway, I just have a question about that. But anyway, it's 146 pages. I'm halfway through it. a lot of the things that are in there is what happened to me. The tablet, the you don't get copies, you know. It's just, oh, well, another
see,
thing.
That's another problem, okay? That signature will never hold up in a court of law. That's another point.
They copied and pasted. They copied and pasted. That I noticed when I was looking, when he was showing me about the no penalty thing, I noticed that my signature was copied to other documents.
Yeah, but was it silly signature off a tablet? Was that the signature they copied?
I don't know how they did it.
Listen to me. It's very easy for them to do it. When you sign that tablet one time, they can cut and paste that signature and put it all over the place. Now, that's easy to prove.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Hold on. But that is easy to prove in a court of law also, because the signature would be perfectly the same in every place they moved that around, and that would prove
right,
the point.
Right, right. I thought
that's
about that. You know,
number two.
Let me tell you something else.
Hold on. No, let me finish this, and we'll move to the next subject matter on this. But the other point is the signature that has no resemblance to your true signature. That could be anyone's scribble. I mean, I never could sign my name on any of those tablets.
It gets so worse. When I did this online, because I ran across the company, I recognized the company. I don't use my real name online. They don't even have my real name on the contracts.
That's a problem for them, isn't it?
It just shows how fly by night, they're just by the seat of their pants, and all they care about is making money, you know? Let me tell you something else that happened. So I contract with this one company that I recognize. It used to be privately owned, and I found out since he sold out to these companies. But it had a good reputation. But when I get the call the day they're going to do the install, it's from a different company.
Yeah, I already
told you.
I told you last time we spoke about this that is something done often. You'll find a company that's a roofing company, and you'll discover actually a roof company is maybe nationwide or statewide or whatever.
But let me tell you, I remember you saying that.
Usually they work a deal out with the supplier where they're getting their supplies from.
But you know what? I contracted with the company that I knew, and this goes to agency. Do you know about agency?
Well, I know what an agency is, but I don't know what you mean. Go ahead, tell me.
Like in real estate, when you buy a house, it's with the broker.
Well, the broker is the intermediary. Okay, there's the bank, there's the seller, there's the broker, there's the buyer.
No, but your agency is with the broker.
But let me tell you something. When you're buying a house and you're going through a real estate, which is the agent, which is the broker, okay, they don't own the house. They make 5-10% on the sale of the house, depending on numerous things.
No, but I'm talking for the contract, for the contract.
Well, I'm going to tell you again, with the contract, with something that has a company that is large or seems to be large, really, they don't do any work but sell. That's all they do is sell. And then they sub out all the work. They usually work a relationship out with the local
supplier. Right, and that's what agency has to do with is the sale, you know.
Yeah, that's
But anyway,
that's
what I'm saying about
out.
This is I contract with this company that I know, right? That's my agency. Then it's hijacked to someone else that I don't have any idea who this is. This is what I talk about, the Russian nesting dolls. I'm going to tell you right now, as of today, I don't know who did my – I don't know who installed it. I really don't.
Well,
Do you think that's a problem?
No, because that's a John Doe or a Jane Doe. As long as you get the whatever characters and main individuals you can get, if you've got an address and someone that's involved, whether it's the financial institution, whether it's the person, the big corporation that made the sale, which is only the seller, let me finish, or even the contractors that came out and did the work, you can't sue just one person in this situation. You've got to sue everybody, because if you only sue one person...
Well, that's a good point. I'll add them. I didn't think of that.
If you sue only the individual that you think is the problem, it's going to be thrown out of court because you failed to bring people in that are part of that case, and the case cannot be decided without those people in there. You know, everybody has to come
in. And I think that they were, I basically think that they were illegals because let me tell you what happened.
Well, I don't need to know that story. We got someone else in the queue right now, too. But look, here's the thing. This is a simple, simple solution. And I thought I gave you pretty much what you need to do. But maybe I didn't add all the information because you didn't
know. No, you told me. I'm working on it.
You got to sue every single person that comes, that touches that. Contract.
You're right. I didn't think of that. I didn't think of adding them, but the company that actually showed up.
Well, you start off with a notice and demand.
I want to talk about something else, though. That was supposed to be an update.
Okay, go ahead.
I want to talk about one person, one vote.
Right.
No parties. You know, parties are a problem.
Do you think it's common sense that it's one person, one vote?
I think it is, but this is my question.
Is. No.
But I don't know. Listen, I don't know enough about it.
What I
want to ask you is,
you don't know enough about
because
what?
the founding fathers, basically addressed parties, didn't they?
Absolutely not. They had nothing to do with parties. Nothing to do. They despised political parties. George Washington's three-quarters of his farewell address was the destruction that political parties would come.
That clears that up.
And he was trying to stop it. Jefferson, they all came on board with that. They wanted no party of that, part of that, nor did they want any.
Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this?
In the world order, because people have lost their common sense, they've lost their logic, they've lost their will. They've been beaten up so bad. It's like the wife that's being beaten up by the husband all the time and never constantly fails to do
this
report and keep.
This is what I see. The way it is with the parties, that all these elites only have to cater to the parties, right? They don't have to cater to the American people.
Look at one,
and that's why.
That's the point. Washington's farewell address. We have it up on our website. You can just Google if you want. You'll find it. George Washington's farewell address. You read that, and it's going to explain exactly what you're talking about. What happens is party bosses come into play. This whole system was set up by individuals who, well, ultimately it was set up by the bar attorneys, the minions of the New World Order. And the ploy was always to put a party in place, put party bosses there, and the party boss would set the stage and what's going on, and they'd get control of the party, and with the Democratic Party particularly, and I'm sure some Republicans too, they have things on these people. They have to vote the way the party boss tells them to vote. Every county has a party boss. Every state has party boss. All states together have a party boss. And they all follow the leader and told what to do. And that's that. That's the problem. That's destructive to a republic. A republic can't survive this.
Well, I kept trying to get from someone why we had them. And someone said, oh, we can't get rid of the Electoral College. And I said, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but if we don't have parties, we don't need an Electoral College.
No, not at all. Look, that's part of the balance of power, the balance written into the Constitution. That prevented cities from taking control of the election of the presidency, particularly, of course, where you can get New York City, California, cities in California, you can go into Michigan, all the big cities, okay, and you don't need them all, just a lot of big cities, you come together. If you can control those big cities and get that block going, you control who you put into office, okay?
If you have one person, one vote...
No, that's a different story. No, the presidency, the election of the presidency... Look, you have to go back and read history. Go into the Federalist Papers. They explain all this. The bottom line with the Electoral College is it prevented a few states from controlling the election of a president over and over and over again. The people who live in a state...
But if you have one person, one vote, that doesn't come into play, does it?
Well, no, yeah. Look at the... if you're talking about all of the other election, it's one person, one vote. When it comes to the presidency, it can't be. That's why they came up with the electoral process, because
I'm lost because I do not see the place for the electoral college in one person, one vote.
No, you can't find it in that, because it's not the way it is for that. You can't get it. Look, let me open a directory and let's look at some states, okay? If you didn't have the Electoral College, let's say a state
you're talking about the way things are with two
Listen to me. You take a state like Arizona. I don't know what the population of Arizona is, but it's a lot less than California and New York. They have no say on the election of the president.
I understand all that on a party system.
No, forget about the party system. I'm talking about one person. They don't have the population in there to make to have any power, clout, or leverage to have a say on who's elected.
Okay, now I understand. Okay.
The party's got to go anyway because they're destructive. Now, when it comes to electing a governor, it comes to electing any representative, a mayor, one person, one vote, that's it. That's the way it should be. And that does not make us a democracy, okay? It's just common sense. Common law is simply common sense. It's no more difficult than that, okay? And you can talk to anybody and ask them, does it make common sense that one person should have one vote and that's it? Everybody would agree with that. Sure, that's why would I have anything more, okay? But also, but when it comes to electing the president, it's a different process. And if you follow through and read it through in the Federalist Papers, you'll understand it because they explain it very clearly on why it had to happen. That's the balance of power. Also, another balance of power that they had already taken away is the 17th Amendment, where the states have something to say. The states do not have any say to whatever goes on in the federal government. There's nothing they can do. There's nothing they can say. They have no vote at all because they don't control the senators. The senators were to be sent there by the legislators of the state. Okay. Usually what would happen is the governor would put a few people up that would maybe be for a senator, you know, to be a senator. So there'd be two senators, they'd put a few people up, and then the House, the legislators, both houses within that state would vote on that. And I'm not sure on both houses, and maybe each state might be different, but the bottom line is the houses would vote on that, on whether they accept that person as a senator or not, then they'd be sent to Washington. Now, if that person doesn't do the will of the state, they have the ability to recall those people and send some other senator in there, another person to represent the state. And that gave them...
You're talking about COS now, right?
Oh, a COS meaning?
Walk the papers and all that stuff.
That's the committee man, which is what we're trying to bring back. The true committee men of the committees of safety. That's the people unconnected from a party, party bosses, and having all of their own. You can have as many people as you want to get involved in that. That's an unalienable right to be involved in a committee of safety and be a committee man and walk the papers to get people onto the ballot. That's a whole different story.
So let me say a couple things. This way I see it is we. Especially now, have the technology.
We got to make this very short because we do have a.
I am. I'm wrapping it up. So we have the technology now that would be perfect for one person, one vote. Sans all the voting corruption and all that. But I got one thing to say. I'm about to launch into, total focus on this. And I'm just letting them know I'm coming because I am going to target this. And I do not understand why we are doing this. Somebody would have to tell me.
Okay.
Until
you got involved to take a stand on that, you'd have to understand that. The problem is there's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. And I'll tell you what, we are all ignorant in so many places because we think we know what's going on in a situation. Nobody has the time to be able to do research in everything you think. So you kind of take some guesses out there and you take a stand, but if someone comes up and brings a debate against you on what you're thinking is wrong, well, you got to reconsider yourself. Maybe I am wrong because
I realized that how this would be put in place would have to be sorted out, of course.
But here's
my
point. Well, forget about sorting it out first. You got to have the knowledge first to be able to sort anything out. The bottom line is you got to understand what they're doing, and there may be numerous things that's happening, okay? And what you know is the right thing to do. Common sense is the key that controls all things. That's called.
No one has given me an answer yet that would, you know.
What's the question?
Support keeping the status quo. I mean, there's no one that has given me an answer.
The criminals want the status quo.
Right.
And the status quo is there because of political parties and bar attorneys. That's why it's there. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. It doesn't go any place further than that. That's the whole bottom line. It's party bosses and
I have this Winston Churchill thing that says some men change their party for the sake of their principles, and others their principles for the sake of their party.
People are like the waves in the sea, and I'm going to end it here because now we've got two people in the queue and we're running short. But look, people are like the waves in the sea. There is a video out there called Stupidity, Stupid People. Okay, and I got to put it up on the website because I watched that. And what I found out when they I knew as soon as they were telling and I was going through the whole, I said they're absolutely right. I can see it. My everything I know agrees with what they're saying here. You can have a person extremely intelligent, able to articulate anything in their specifics, you know, whatever it is that they've been studying. But there are two things that take place. Okay. People are taught wrong things and they run with it. When you go to college, for instance, you know there's a political bias is going on in there. People have taken control of the education system and they are putting all kinds of biases in there. They're teaching lies for truth and people come out believing the truth, believing the lie as truth. And when you try to correct them, they refuse to go forward with that. They refuse to agree to that. But people pull things out of their rear end, so to speak, all the time when they make statements and have conversations because they're working off what they think they know. But there's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. It's not what you don't know that's going to get you, because if you admit you don't know, you're looking into it. But it's what you think is true or is so and is not so, that's what's going to get you. And it happens all the time. And what I have discovered, a lot of these doctors, I mean, you try to talk to a doctor about vitamins and supplements, and they will poo-poo that right out. They don't want, you know, they think you're crazy.
Right.
Pharmaceutical, because that's what they were taught. They spend a lot of money to get that education. They believe that. Lawyers do the same thing, and all these other fields are pretty much the same thing. They're not free thinkers, and that's the problem. They also go along with all the cattle. They're like sheep, okay? The sheep in this particular area, sheep in that particular area. It's the same thing in every subject matter you go into. So that's the problem we have. But I got to go. We can talk another time. I got to go. We got to get these other two people. All right?
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. John, good to see you. You got the mic. John from Michigan.
Yeah. Well, I'll make it short. So in conclusion, you can't get word of advice, John. you were talking about the dollar. I know we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
All I got to do is just take off three zeros. I mean, that's what they've done down in Mexico. They've done these. You just take off three zeros and start again. I mean, when it gets to $1,000 an ounce, it's ten cents is worth $100. If you take off three zeros, that's true.
That's a quick look at it. But if you want to just show the mathematical equation, you know, I did it the way I did. But
right.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's very simple.
So I mean, there's that. And the other thing I got to tell you is, and I mentioned this before. A dollar is not a thing. It's the name of a thing. It's an adjective.
Right.
Okay. It's taken right out of the weights and measures.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, a dollar is a unit of weight of precious metal. In this case, it's 1/20th of an ounce of gold or 1 ounce of silver. Or basically, 1 ounce of silver. So I mean, you got to think of it like that. I mean, if I said I want eight.
I agree with you in the world of inflation. You're
right.
Absolutely absolutely right. In a world of inflation, which is the way the whole world thinks, and very few people think outside that lane, okay, Bessette thinks outside that lane, Trump thinks outside that lane, I think outside that lane, because I've looked at the other side of things to try to figure out what is really going on and how we're going to, how are they going to fix this economy, and I think I laid that out tonight in that video that I played. But you're absolutely right. In the process of dealing with all these things from the perspective of realizing you're talking in the world that they created, an economy that they created, okay, which again is not the way it should be. But if you go over back to the value of silver to gold, okay, and it has a name, call it a dollar, okay, that's outside of inflation. It doesn't play, and it's connected with a weight of silver. Okay, or a weight of gold for the $20 piece, which is an ounce of gold. It's connected to that, absolutely, but it doesn't change. It doesn't alter. The value never moves. It always remains the same. Inflation doesn't exist in that world, and thereby you will get, you'll get prosperity, and it's all common sense at that point. But right. You're right. I kind of see it both ways too.
Yeah, I think that's what was that one of the commandments is, thou shalt not steal more than 5% per year compounded semi-annually. I think that's what it says, right? That's what they've been doing. They've been stealing from us constantly more and more. And like you said, they've so far, if the dollar is worth 0.2 cents, they have stolen 99.8% of our value.
Well, they said more than that. Yeah, they've. Let me tell you something. Many, many years ago, in my days of ignorance, early on, I was a contractor. I connected with an individual who was trying to go out into the offshore. Wanted to put some money offshore, and in order to go offshore, you had to have a limited amount of money. You had to, minimum amount to be able to put money and investment out offshore. And that was to prevent people from coming in, the common person. But the whole thing is a con job, I found out, because what happens, so we got about, 100 people together. We all threw in $1,000 or whatever it was. And so we had enough money to go off, and we lost our money because the feds came in and shut us right down. But, all the rich people are playing out there. But what goes on is you get this money offshore, and you put it into a bank, okay? First thing you do, you're focusing in on buying coffee being grown in South America or whatever the case may be. I don't know. But you put the money into a bank offshore, and let's say it's $100,000. So you get that money into the bank. Now, it gets leveraged at 10%. And so you got 90% of that money. You can then put it into another account. You can leverage it again, and you can leverage this numerous times. And then you got, instead of $100,000, you got $1,000,000. So by the time you get to the end of this game, or $500,000, and then you make the investment, then you get your percentage. The whole thing is a con job, and that's how I believe. Because I don't know how the economy really works, but I believe, I know that that's how the banking system works. They work off of 10% leverage. They will only have 10% of what's on the books in the bank in any kind of a support, in gold, silver, or the dollars themselves, okay, which are worthless, But, it's a game they've been playing for a long time. We're suckers. We're suckers.
Yeah, I've told that story before. You mean if you're making Campbell's soup, you put in one can of soup and one can of water. Now, wouldn't you have 10 times as much soup if you put in 10 cans of water? And that's all we've done with our currency.
Oh, yeah. I noticed, when you go out, when I was a kid, we used to eat, for lunch sometimes especially, you'd have the Chef Boyardee spaghetti and meatballs or ravioli, and it really tasted good, nice thick sauce. You go out and buy it now, it's full of water, okay? Mm-hmm. And everything is shrunk down, watered down, and again, filled with poison, and we just continue it. So, but they're working on it to fix these problems.
You got one more person in the queue here, but I just remember that a dollar is a unit of measurement. It's a weight of money. That's what you measure money in.
I wouldn't disagree with that. But again, it's still, I think it can play two roles at the same time. Okay, maybe a better way to look at it is this way. A dollar that is resting on the weight of silver, you could call that a silver certificate. Where the dollar that's rested on air, you would call that a Fed note. So, maybe that's another way to look at it, so you have a different name for it.
Right. Well, they did that purposely. They printed that on a piece of paper. So right. I mean, what's the difference between a $10 bill and a $1 bill? It's just one more zero, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
and there's nothing backing it anyway, so.
Yeah, so.
And so there's a lot of digital money out there. And I figured all of that into my equations, all of the digital money in the banks that's out there and whatever liquidity they have and cash that's floating around, and you put it all together. And it is pretty much pretty close to, if you work out the $20,000 an ounce, okay, and you work that down to the values of what that comes up to be, it's equal to the $19 billion on both sides, and that permitted a 1-to-1 exchange, but 1-to-1, it would have to really go to a 4-to-1, I would think, for numerous reasons. I mean, you know, because we still have to survive certain things, we still have a deficit to deal with, and we have to have some kind of leverage sitting somewhere to hold that until we pay it off. And I do believe, there's no doubt in my mind from looking at the way this thing is working, that Trump will pay off this debt before he's out of office.
You could write a check on a piece of toilet paper and give it to the Fed and for $20 trillion, and they would get exactly what they gave us, which is nothing.
Yeah, but you got to remember, it's not necessarily just the Fed. There's a lot of investments. We went through the list of all those investments, and there's also Social Security. There's Medicare involved in this. There's stocks and bonds for retirement. I mean, there's all kinds of, and I looked at all those things to come up with the numbers that I would get that number. And so, there are people, companies that have invested. They bought bonds. People bought bonds, and so on and so forth. So, you know, there's a lot of people that get hurt there, you know. But then there is a lot of money that's funny money. That's where you can burn those people, you know. Plus they have huge amounts of assets, properties, liquidity, everything that we could take away from them because they defrauded us. Right. And so therefore we got a lot that we can pull in. I can see him settling this whole problem easily by his last year in office. Everything would be done. I do see it happening.
We're good. Hey, I'll get off and let the other person get on there. But, yeah, thank you, John.
All right. Okay, thanks, John. Take a last caller here is Brett. You got the mic. Go right ahead, Brett.
Hello?
Yep, Brett, go right ahead.
Hey, John. So I have two questions. One being if a case has been closed, does that mean it's closed for good, or can it be reopened to address it?
What kind of case?
Well, again, this is for my minor.
Okay, criminal case though, or a civil case?
This would be for, disorderly conduct for being loud.
Yeah, again, it's in between. It's probably civil anyway, but it doesn't really matter. Look, here's the problem that they have, and here's the situation and the good news for you, okay? You never had your day in court. No one has ever had their day in court. In my entire life, I've never had my day in court, okay? There are a few cases that I did happen to win some years back in construction, okay? But generally speaking, even then, I never had my day in court because I never went to a court of justice. I never went to a court of record. That's the only court that I have any business to go into, and they have the business to supply that court, and they don't, okay? What they do is they take control, they come in with summary judgments, all these judges, and even now, anybody that runs that, usually judges, but it could be anyone that's running the case, they make these summary judgments and decisions. They have no power and no authority to do that, because, look, common sense will tell you, okay, the Bible tells us, you know,
that
you got someone at the door there, huh? common sense will tell you, the Bible tells us that the master cannot be, the servant doesn't rule over the master, okay? We are the master. The government, every person in government is the servant. They are servants. They have no power, no authority, no business ruling anything about me and my life. That can only be done by a jury of my peers, 12 individuals. And that's the biblical position. There were 12 witnesses that Christ was who he said he was. And ultimately, if you go back into history, we're talking tens of thousands of people bore witness of Christ in that case, of course. But the thing is 12 individuals come in and they all have to agree. If one person just holds out and says, nope, not guilty, nope, not guilty, nope, not guilty, nope, not guilty, they have no choice but to then come and say, okay, fine, and he's not guilty. Because it has to be all 12. They don't even do that anymore. And sometimes, like in Trump's case, they broke it down into three different divisions. They took the 12 and they said, you four will decide this, you four will decide that, and you four decide that. I've never heard such ridiculous and absurd things, but that's what took place in one of Trump's cases. They decided a couple of different things, and it was decided by only four people ultimately, even though there was 12 people sitting on a jury. Okay? They have totally destroyed our court system. So, yeah, you've never had your day in court. When we get courts of justice back, by God's mercy, and I do think Trump now is moving that direction, and hearing little things here or there that make me think, hey, I think it's happening. I think he sees it. I think he's doing it. Okay? And when that day comes, yeah, you can go back to your court, and you don't have to pay a penny because they can't charge us to go into a court of justice. That's our unalienable right to have the ability to go into a court of justice. We already paid for the building. We paid for any of the salaries of all those people, the computers, the office. We paid for everything, okay? And we even paid the whatever we pay this jury. We've already paid that in our taxes. Why are we giving them any money? You know, the only purpose that a sum of money was come up to get into a court, you know, you pay here in New York, it's $310. Well, that's for fictions, corporations, and that makes sense. Yeah, they should pay some money to go in to use our court system because they're fictions themselves. So, but yeah, you can go in and you can open that case and you can sue everybody to the hills.
Okay, so part two.
That's
of
my
that
plan.
Is, part two of that is everybody that's been on the, the dockets or citation,
yep.
Do all of them get listed as defendants when reopening?
Yeah, absolutely. You go in and you make them the defendants. Absolutely. You turn everything around on them because there's nothing ever decided in any court of law against you. It was all just, whatever the status quo, okay? They take care of their own.
Okay, and that's including any self-appointed attorney for the defendant?
I'm not sure I understand. In other words, you or your child being the defendant, I think is what you're saying, and their lawyer, they have a lawyer, is that what you're talking about, or are you talking about...
Yeah, because they called me up and said that they've been appointed, and I'm like, well...
They can't be appointed.
We never appointed you.
Right, they can't be appointed. They do this all day long because, people are dumb, they're stupid. And I speak to myself first because I was just as dumb as anybody else and just as stupid as anyone else, okay? And not that I'm stupid because I think I'm reasonably bright. And I have certain expertise. I do a lot of focus on certain issues, certain subject matter, and I think I'm very good at that. But there's lots of things in my life that I'm really, not so bright on, and I have certain presumptions because of my life and what I received and what I think and opinions I've heard, and I took on opinion, hey, that's a good opinion, or I made my own opinion, maybe collected and put a couple opinions together and said, that's my opinion. But that doesn't get you to the truth. What gets you to the truth is digging down deep into the subject matter, understanding the subject matter, and then applying it. And nobody has enough time in their life to do deep researches in everything that they do. You know, a lot of stuff just seems to be working well, it looks good, and you jump into the game. Unfortunately, that gets us into a lot of trouble, especially when it comes to something that's serious. If you're going to be a court system, you're going to go into the court, well, that's something you better go do your homework about, understand what's going on, what the consequences could be, or what the true law is, and what kind of law they're trying to apply upon you, the control that they try to take control over you, all those things. People don't look at those things. I would go to court, and I'd sit down, and I'd watch these people come in with their lawyers, and they're looking. They have no clue what's going on. They're not even paying attention. They're looking around the courtroom from time to time, and the lawyers taking care of their business. They're not paying attention at all. Not at all. And that's how bad it is. and we've given ourselves up to these people. And the worst place to do that is in a doctor's office or in a courtroom. That's my opinion. I don't trust the doctor as far as I can throw him, and I don't trust the lawyer. Goodness, I don't trust the lawyer at all, period. Doesn't matter how far I can throw him. So, it's just okay. The way it is. Okay?
Thank you.
All right, that brings us to the end of our evening here. Good night, everybody. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And again, remember our questions, if you have any questions, should be sent to mail now. Mail@nationallibertyalliance.org. Good night.